It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 528. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow, and facebook.com/MikeNationNet. We also have the wiki at mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all the old shows, links to the audio, the show notes. It's a great resource. I have, again, a full show to cover. I have stories from the trenches with some tips and some things I've learned, also running into an email problem on a couple clients with iPhones, with Google Apps. I want to review that because I've tried a bunch of things and can't fix it. I have a little bit of email that I want to cover. And then we have our traditional Christmas song at the end of the show, which I will play. This will be the last show before Christmas. And then, of course, the next show will be the New Year's Eve show, where I intend on recording a show and then being live to ring in the new year. And I will play music, talk tech, pretty much whatever anybody wants for New Year's Eve. And that always turned out really nice. And a lot of people in the chat, we have a lot of fun, and I'll stay up pretty late. I want to thank Instant House Call for being a sponsor of the Mike Tech Show. I cannot take care of all of the clients that I take care of if it wasn't for Instant House Call. The unattended mode that I have on all of the workstations and servers that I manage makes it so much easier to just log in and do maintenance. It's such a pleasure to be able to transfer files when I need to. All you got to do is pick up a file and just drag and drop it on the screen, and then a little menu pops up and you can tell it where you want to save it. And you can try it right now free for 15 days by clicking on the link on the left-hand side of my website, the big Instant House Call ad, or just go to instanthousecall.com. But please remember to use the promo code MikeTechShow and you'll get your free 15 days, and you can start kicking the tires and seeing for yourself just how good Instant House Call is. Let's get started by talking about the email migration that I performed on Friday, and it just went perfectly. I had 6 users that are on a local Exchange server, and first thing I needed to do was change the MX records. And this is a client that I had difficulties in the past, where I've talked about the problems where email went down because their DNS disappeared. They've had nightmares with their DNS. We now own the DNS. Made sure that transfer happened a few weeks ago. So when it came time to make the change for the MX records, instead of pointing directly to their Exchange server and their static IP address, I now was able to put Sherweb's IP information for their MX records. Performed the MX record change, seeing that it was working by going to mxtoolbox.com. I've mentioned that in the past. That's my go-to utility to see if the MX records are correct. And it's so nice going to a third party like that after you make that change, typing in their domain and seeing those MX records match exactly the way they're supposed to. So the week before the migration, I assisted the person, the main contact, to log into SureWeb and create their account. Then they sent me all the emails so I can administrate it. So I have the default login and the password. I log in and I create all of the email accounts. I then make sure one of the people there are an admin. So this way I can admin it with the default user account, and then also a body that's an employee, I always make sure as a backup, as an admin, just in case something happens to me. Then the difficult thing, depending on how much email, is doing that export. So my son Michael was with me, and we divided and conquered and hit the desktops and started exporting the email. A couple people just have very little email, so the export just went, ooh, piece of cake, exporting to the PST. One user was the bulk of the email. They only have a 25 gig storage for all of their email. Well, guess what? 23 gig was one user who happens to be the owner of the company who does not delete anything. That took a long time. That took a couple hours just to do that export. And that's where, if there was anything difficult, that was the only thing that just slowed us down. Everything else was perfect because we were able to do the exports. Then I was able to, once the exports were done, and even while we were exporting that last one, this is the big tip, where I went to the Exchange server and made a change in AutoDiscover. One of the things that started with Exchange 2008 and on, actually, Exchange 2007, but Small Business Server 2008. They built in this AutoDiscover to work with Outlook 2007 and above, that if you were logged in on a domain account and you were setting up Outlook, Outlook would auto-discover and find the Exchange server, find that user's account, and automatically set up the service. And it was just boom, 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 a couple clicks, and you're done. Well, a lot of Exchange hosting companies have an auto-discover IP address that is assigned to you, a public IP address, that you put as an A record in your DNS. This is why you have to have control of the DNS. So I did this that afternoon. I put the A record, auto-discover, and the IP address that SureWeb gave me. Now, when I go to type in the user's name and password and just their email address, it does all the complicated setups for the proxy and everything for Outlook. But if you have Exchange 2007 or Windows Server 2008 or greater, there's an auto-discover that's built into Exchange that you have to disable. And that command, I'm going to put in a text file and have it available to everybody, because if you are working with Exchange and you're migrating somebody, you must do this. The first thing you have to do is get the name of the client access server. So you have to open up the PowerShell command prompt for Exchange. Type the command get-client-access-service. Once that gives you the name, which is usually the name of the server, but you can't take any chances. Once you get that name, you plug it into a command that says set client access server identity, and in quotes, the name of the server. Then there's a dash auto discover service interval URL $null. So that sets the and disables the auto-discover on the server. So now the auto-discover you put in the public DNS takes over, and it makes it so much easier to do any migration. I know I lost some of you who could care less about mail migrations, and then there's the other half that's saying, well, that's a great tip, and then there's some of you saying, I knew that, that's what I do, because I manage and I administrate an Exchange server. I wanted to put that out there because that saves so much time, have an auto-discover. where now I can go to all the clients and set up a new profile, and it just takes seconds. The hard part now is taking, what do I do with that 22 gig email for that 23 gig PST file? Well, since everybody else was done, you know what? I just started importing it. After I set up his profile, I just started the import back. And since nobody else was using the network, I was really going to take that home and use my 35 meg up and FTP it to ShareWeb and then let it marry to the account. You know what? It only took a few hours, and I was able to remote in with Instant House Call and keep an eye on it later that night. I started the import back in. My son and I cleaned up, got everything done that we needed, finished. We actually went to dinner, came back, and I logged in and checked, and everything was fine. It was finished. It took a couple hours to upload, and everybody was done. I sent test messages back and forth to everybody's account, back and forth to my iPhone, and it went flawlessly. I've been very, very lucky. You know what? It's not luck. It's not luck when you if you know what you're doing. I have not had any problems for the last migrations. I talked about that one that I had with Smarsh that was really, the problem was they didn't understand AutoDiscover. And had they understood AutoDiscover, and they would have told me what was going on, that would have solved all of our problems. And I had to root that out. If they had just found that out and told me the first time around rather than making me upgrade Office, they actually made me upgrade all the users to Office 2010 and Outlook 2010. And you know what? We really didn't have to do that. They could have stayed at 2007. That's why I'm mentioning the AutoDiscover. Another item. Tonight, I am configuring a Synology NAS for a client that I want to describe this. They are an inspection company. They do house inspections, and they also test for radon. And I got a call in the beginning of the week from the owner, who I know, and he said, Mike, one of our drives has failed on a very old server we have here, and we only use it for file shares, for just sharing files. What should I do? Should I start, you know, go buy another server? And I said, how much space are we talking about? He said, a terabyte. I said, you know what? Let's not worry about that terabyte. Let's not worry about a server. Let's get a NAS device. And for just under $200, we got a Synology diskless diskless NAS that can do two drives. I'll have the link in the show notes for that. We talked about how many terabytes should he have, and we just agreed that if he just had a mirrored drive, 3 terabytes would be fine. So we bought 2 Western Digital 3 terabyte NAS drives. I've stuck them in before the show tonight and set this up. I've actually set up a share on my network and started writing files back and forth. Everything's great. It's all configured. And now all I got to do is go to the office tomorrow. We're actually not doing the data migration tomorrow. We're going to do that on Sunday. Yeah, I actually said Sunday. It's interesting. I'm working all day tomorrow, Friday. I'm working Saturday. I forgot that I'm actually going to be doing this Sunday remotely. I'm working all day Monday and Tuesday, and I'm also working Wednesday morning, which is Christmas Eve. It's insane. My schedule is completely insane. There's been no time to get ready for Christmas, so I am way behind. And Sunday's the only day I can actually go out and do Christmas shopping. I've done a bunch online, but there's still things I got to go out and get. That's Sunday. I figured I would just throw that out there because it just dawned on me that I'm going to be doing this data migration on Sunday where I will have Instant House Call on the server and I can remote in and have this set up, but the owner's going to be with me at the other end, and we don't want to migrate everything, so he's going to help me with what has to migrate. We're going to copy all those files over. What made me think of talking about this is when you give servers names, and it's very interesting, their file server, their main server, is called Sherlock. And I said, well, how about if I just name this server? And he says, no, since we're both going to be up at the same time, let's name this Watson. So I named this Watson, and it's pretty easy to set up. You go to, there's a website, findsynology.com. when you go there, find.synology.com, in a browser, it invokes a script that then searches your network, and it comes up, and it starts prompting you right away for what you want to do. It found the two disks. How would you like to configure it? Boom, 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 boom. And you just, away you go and start answering the questions. Once you get in there, you just start setting up your file shares and permissions, and that's it. You know, there's apps, there's all kinds of things you can do with the Synology NAS. You've heard me talk about it a lot. It's a great way for migrating a company that has a traditional server and they don't need it. The test on whether they need a server or not, are they running applications that have to be running on the server? If they have a SQL database, if they have, and that's what usually it is, a database of some kind. If they have a client server app, if there's software that has to run on the server, you got no choice. Then you have to get a server. But if they only have shared files, a NAS is a great solution. Let me move on to a couple other things. My Surface Pro 3, when I pull that out with clients, wow, a couple clients just went crazy over it. They just love it. A financial advisor wants to be able to bring up his client's info and make annotations with the pen and have it on the screen. So one of the things with the Surface Pro 3, an accessory that you might want to consider if you've got to make presentations onto a TV and you want to do this wirelessly, they have the wireless display adapter, which plugs right into an HDMI port of the TV, and then it's powered via a USB. So it's just a little dongle that you plug into the two ports. That's it. You set it up, it's a piece of cake, and then you can start having your Surface Pro automatically display on the TV. I have a couple clients that are purchasing them right now, and it makes life really easy for presentations that way, especially anybody that's a financial advisor or something like that, where you have clients come into your office and you got a big screen and you need to present like that. It makes it nice. Plus, having that thin, light laptop, that hybrid tablet laptop. But as I pulled it out, I wish I could get a commission and sell them. The best I can do is maybe send them my Amazon link and have them buy it there. It's been nice, and it's been, my tablet's been working really, really well. And I've been able to successfully do everything I've needed to do at a client's site using the Surface Pro 3. Before I get to emails, I have actually three clients with the same problem. They have various iPhones. I think one has an iPhone 4, another one's an iPhone 5S, and I think the other one's an iPhone 5. They all have Google Apps for their email. Using the IMAP protocol, they're getting an error. They can't connect to imap.gmail.com. I've had them reboot the phone. I've had them delete and recreate the account. I've had them go, if you read the forums, there's a place to go to unlock it, to add that as another device and log in. I've went to that. I've tried everything that you can Google, at least what I found with that error, and no joy. That we've had no solution. Right now, tonight, I'm actually getting ready to have them go to POP. Now, this has been the last 2 days I've been having this problem. And it's just three clients. And I know I have a lot more clients that use IMAP and Google Apps that are not having this problem. I'm one of them. I have Google Apps and my MHSconsulting.net, and I use IMAP on my phone, no problem at all. But it seems like it's a common problem out there. I almost thought, wow, maybe Gmail's having a problem. Google's got some kind of an outage or some kind of an issue with IMAP. I'm going to convert them to POP on their phone. It's not ideal, but at least it'll get us over the hump as to what's happening. Anybody that can weigh in on this problem, I'm willing to try anything. Let me know. Compose an email. And if it helps, I will take care of you by sending you, I still have some Malwarebyte Premium licenses, lifetime licenses. I still have some keys. I will make it worth your while if you can come up with some helpful suggestions. Let's get to some email here. This is from Alec. Hey, Mike, I have a question for you that can maybe be answered during your next show. I currently have one server room at my house, but I want to put another one at a different location. How would I securely join these servers together? Both locations have their own fast internet connections. How do you join these two networks together such that every computer can see every other computer? Thanks, sincerely, Alec. Alec, there's one easy answer, and that's LogMeIn Hamachi. Get the paid version. I think it's only $29 for the year, and you can have an incredible amount of connections. I would try that first. The only other way is to have two hardware firewalls that have VPN built in and then link the two. Maybe I would either do the LogMeIn Hamachi, or I would do two untangled devices and put an untangled device at the front of my one server room, an untangled device at the other one, and use the built-in VPN capabilities between the two. That'll take a little work and a little tweaking, and you're going to have someone at each location and be on the phone as you could be tweaking this. The easy solution is Hamachi. A good hardware solution that's free, except for the hardware that you need, is Untangle. Thank you for the question, but the big answer is VPN between the two locations. This is from Martin. In show 527, you had a question about resetting Windows because of an IE browser issue. One thing I did not hear you suggest is checking on tools compatibility view settings. I find that the fix is to add the site to the list. Once this is done, many websites will load properly. Great suggestion. Thank you. This is from Kate, your listener who couldn't load his Blogspot dashboard or blogs. It could be an extension. Try starting IE with no extensions, or try the Avast portable browser cleaner available on Bleeping Computer. That's a couple great suggestions, Kate. Thank you. And I'll have links to these suggestions in the show notes. This is from Ian. I wanted to bring up a possible topic about Comcast service and billing issues. I think this would be an interesting subtopic for a show. Comcast service and billing issues. You know, you're at the mercy of your ISP, and there's very little you can do. If they make a mistake on your bill, you got to fight. You got to call them up, and you just got to be persistent. Comcast, like Verizon, they all make mistakes. They all will start to have creep up of the increase of your billing by slipping in services you don't need and mistakes. It's going to happen. So that's why you always have to look at your bill. I will never have an auto pay for my bills for my ISP. I want to examine that bill before that is automatically deducted from my account. Now, I will pay it online, but I won't let it auto pay. So, and there's a big difference. Now, about service for Comcast, you want to try to get to that tier 2 or tier 3. Tier 1 support is that basic Comcast support where they're reading from a script. Did you reboot? Did you turn it off? Did you, what operating system are you using? What, you know, and they go through the whole thing, and there's nothing you can do except be persistent and keep trying to escalate that you've already done this. You know that the problem must be outside, or it must be their device. I don't know how much more we can talk about it especially for a show or even a big topic, except for what I'm talking about. I always like to use Comcast's hardware because it puts the onus on them to solve the problem even if you're paying a rental fee for that device, I still think it's worth it, because if you have an issue, they're going to be more responsible if it's their hardware. Where if you bought the modem, let's say from Best Buy, you bought your cable modem, well, now they can point the finger at that. And now you're at the mercy of the manufacturer, who has no idea whether there's an outage or any kind of connection issue. Or I don't recommend putting in your own cable modem when I want that from the provider, because I want them to support that. And when I call, I want them to be responsible for fixing it. The only other issue is if your Comcast goes down, if there's a problem, you need to check the lines outside. Did anything get cut? Is anybody doing work in the area? I've had that happen with my Fios several times, where a truck came through and the low-hanging wire, the truck was too big, and it took out my cable. And Fios had to run a whole new fiber line to the house. I've had another one where the telephone pole fell. And another one where it was really Comcast cut my Fios connection. And I don't have Comcast, and they were working on a pole, and they cut my Verizon fiber. And again, they had to have it run. Fiber has been run to my house 3 different occasions because of the issue. Uncle Al in the chat just said, if you don't have a Comcast modem, they will give you no support at all. And Nick in the chat, the problem with ISP modems are they're very insecure. That's okay. So here's what I do. I turn off the wireless on their device, and I put another router firewall behind it. You don't have to use that as the primary protection. But what I would do, and certainly not for the wireless, what I would do is put my own device behind it and then let that be for your wireless and everything for your network. That's the better solution. Have the ISP provide a cable modem, and then for security, make sure you put your own firewall behind that. That's my recommendation. Ian, I don't know if that answered your question. If you have any more, I guess, follow-up questions, give me some more detail what you're looking for. And if I did answer it, let me know. Thanks. This is from George, and he says, on your most recent show, you had a listener ask about getting up to speed on HIPAA. You can pass on this course and the related blog that Dave has to your listener. And this is a blog and actually a course that's going to be starting on Monday, January 5th, 2015. I will put a link to the founder of this course, David, and his blog. I am going to forward this to you. I think it was Andrew who sent me this. I will forward you this email. Anything that we can have for resources for compliance is wonderful. And you want to learn as much as you can, so this way you have more services that you can offer your clients that will enable you to earn more money and pick up more clients. So anything you can learn and add to your toolbox and just services that you can provide, and learning more about HIPAA, about FINRA, about PCI compliance for credit cards, all of that alphabet soups of compliance will assist you in earning more money. And the better you can become at making sure your clients and their businesses are protected with these compliances, the better off you are. So any resources, please share them with us, and I'll make sure they get out there to everybody that's listening. George, thank you very, very much for sharing that. I want to take this time to remind everybody that if you are buying from Amazon for the holiday season, what a great way. You can still buy this weekend right now and still have items delivered before Christmas. you have up until, you know, delivery on Christmas Eve, please use my link. And a lot of you have been, and I really appreciate it. Amazon.micnation.net. Your price stays the same, but a commission comes back to support the show, and I really, really, really appreciate that. I got some music I'm going to play in a second. I want to thank everybody for supporting the show and being there, and the two meetups we had this past year, everybody that took the time to come out and meet, and some of you came to both meetups, and I so, so appreciate and really enjoyed meeting with everybody. And I, you know, celebrating my 500th show this year, it was tremendous. I never would have thought that it's been almost 10 years now I've been doing this show, and I never would have thought that I'd be doing it this long. I really didn't. I didn't think there was enough people that would want to listen to this long. It's been such a joy and a pleasure doing this show, and I want to wish everybody, no matter what your faith is, no matter what you're celebrating, a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, a happy and safe holiday season. Take the time. Spend it with your loved ones and your family. I try so hard always to have the perfect Christmas, and you can't. I stress over wanting everything to be right, wanting everything to be perfect. It's so hard that sometimes we're spending so much time chasing that perfection that we forget some of the little things that's in front of us, of what the season's all about. Take time to spend it with your loved ones, your friends, family. That's what's important. And it's spending that quality time with them during the holidays. With that, I play my favorite Christmas song that I play this every year in the show before Christmas. And it's the Christmas Canon by the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. And it's Pachelbel's Canon, but set to their music. And it's tremendous. And I always put this link in the show notes where you can buy this song for 99 cents from Amazon. Give a listen to A Christmas Canon. And to me, one of the most beautiful Christmas songs. And I love it. And I love sharing it with you. I'll be back after this. That was A Christmas Canon by the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and I'll have a link to Amazon where you can purchase that song for just 99 cents, I believe. That's it for the last show before Christmas. And again, I want to wish everybody a happy holiday and a safe holiday. And I will be back New Year's Eve for a Mike Tech Show New Year's Eve and the post show. I will ring in the new year across all the time zones in the U.S. See if you can join in. And if you, hey, maybe you're coming back from that New Year's Eve party and you don't feel like going to sleep, hey, come see if I'm still online. I might be. So that's it. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a great holiday, and I will see you New Year's Eve. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.